Welcome to the Power of Attorney Project, which is part of our Conversations That Matter podcast. My name is Mary Bart, Chair of Caregiving Matters. This podcast is intended to provide general information only and is not intended to be a substitute for seeking personalized legal, financial, or other advice. This podcast raises issues that our audience can further explore on their own in their own local communities with their own local experts. This project will help to be a call to action for families to solve their issues, find solutions to their problems, and have greater peace of mind.
And today's podcast is called British Columbia's Experience with Law Reform. And our guest expert is Joanne Taylor. Joanne is the Executive Director and Registrar for NIDAS Personal Planning Resource Center and Registry. Welcome, Joanne.
Thank you.
Let's get started. I have a couple of questions for you. And my first one is, what is NIDAS?
Well, NIDAS is a nonprofit charitable organization. We were established in 1995 by other nonprofit charitable organizations, particularly seniors and disability community groups. And the reason is those groups and many others were involved in a grassroots law reform effort in British Columbia to create an alternative to adult guardianship. And these groups worked in a unique partnership with government to reform the law around adult guardianship legislation, which led to the creation of new laws. And they knew, these groups and individual citizens knew, that it would be important to have a resource center for the public. Because if you can only get information about the law from government or lawyers and notaries, it's not going to be accessible enough. And the vision of these groups and citizens and government was that we wanted the new law, to be very accessible to people, and we wanted to enable people to use it in their personal life. And I'll describe a little more about what that means. But just to give you that sense, that we were set up as a resource center to enhance accessibility. And I should also mention that NIDAS, N for Nancy, I, D for Donald, US, NIDAS is a Latin term for nest. So the letters don't stand for anything. It's a symbol of support and safety. And that's kind of how we look at our legislation. And that's what it offers people.
Thank you for that. So then what is NIDAS's role?
So our role is to provide information and assistance to the public so that they can use this legislation in their personal life. They can use it to help themselves and help each other, because, of course, we are talking about making arrangements so that if you need assistance, you can, if you've made your arrangements with legal documents, you've authorized people who could help you with your finances or with healthcare decision making, then you've looked after things for yourself and others who care about you, and you don't need to rely on the state or government for that, which we, you know, loosely call guardianship, adult guardianship. So being able to help people understand that and then be able to use the legal tools is our role. And because we grew out of the grassroots law reform, our focus has been on kind of being like a, I call it a hub of expertise, or like a clearinghouse, that's a word we used in the older days, where people can share their experiences and then we can share those with others. And so we're really helping to help each other know how best to use these legal documents and new understandings about the law, so that we are promoting best practices. So again, traditionally, you know, when we're looking at legislation like wills, legal documents, the knowledge about that and the way to do it is pretty much in the hands of legal professionals and then the institutions, the formal institutions that you have to deal with. And what we're trying to do here in British Columbia is, and I think what we've done, is to make sure that the actual users, the people who need to use these documents to help themselves and help each other, can be part of building the knowledge around that, around the practice of that. And so it's a very dynamic kind of resource center, I think, in that sense, that it's always, we're always learning, we're always sharing what we've learned. And of course, we do that not just with the public, but with professionals, with government, with institutions. In fact, we are the go-to resource in British Columbia around what we call personal planning. And maybe I could just explain why and how we're using that term. The term personal planning is the term we like to use to differentiate from estate planning. And estate planning is about making arrangements for after death, and the will is the main legal document for that. And that's where the spotlight has been, I think, for a great deal of time. And, of course, with the aging of the population and other factors, we've come to realize that we have to put the spotlight on a period of time when we're alive, but we might need assistance with decision-making, with managing our affairs due to a serious illness, injury, a disability. And so the term personal planning lets us think about that and focus on that concept. Oh, I need to make some arrangements for that period of my life before death, in case I need assistance. And there are legal documents that you can use to do that. And the idea of personal planning is to look at what you need to address. And we talk about four life areas. The law divides our life into four general categories: health care, decisions that relate to health care issues, personal care. That often doesn't get a lot of attention, but in fact, it can be one of the most important areas, because personal care is about where you live. So living arrangements, it's about those quality of life things, your preferences, your lifestyle. Do you like a straight razor or electric razor? You know, it's important, you know, what kind of clothes do you like to wear, where you have your hair done. If you can't look after those things for yourself, you want somebody to be able to do that according to you, what's important to you and your wishes. Would also cover, you know, spiritual beliefs and enabling you to maintain those. So we have health care, personal care, and then the other areas, legal affairs, which might mean some kind of compensation, insurance. If you were in a car accident, it could mean being able to go to small claim court to make sure you're rights are honored, and if there's any kind of suit or even Supreme Court. So just making sure that any legal issues can be looked after, and then financial matters, which I think we know is can be an everyday thing, dealing with banking, investments, but also income tax matters and those kinds of things. So that's how we're looking at the topic, and we're helping people to learn about that. And of course, we want to help people actually get things in place so that they have their arrangements made in case somebody needs to help them. And that could be for a short term, or it could be more ongoing.
Thank you for that. That's wonderful. My next question is, and you started to touch on it, what legal documents are available in British Columbia to plan for incapacity?
Right. So every province, of course, has its own legislation. And in British Columbia, we have the representation agreement, which people can use to cover health and personal care matters. And for legal and financial, we have the enduring power of attorney. So I'm sure the term power of attorney is familiar to people. Every province has a document with that name in it. But the law reform means that we have something additional in British Columbia. So I am planning for the future. I make my own decisions now. I can manage my finances. So for health and personal care matters, I'm making what we call in British Columbia a representation agreement under Section 9. We sometimes call that RA9. And Section 9 just refers to a part of the Representation Agreement Act. And that's the act that citizens worked on from the grassroots to create. So that's the law reform piece. So for health and personal care, I would make a Representation Agreement Section 9. I would authorize my representative to be able to make healthcare decisions for me and personal care decisions if I can't make them for myself, and that would include refusing life support if that decision came up and my representative, knowing my wishes, could refuse life support on my behalf if I can't do it myself. For financial legal, the enduring power of attorney, I can appoint someone to be my attorney. That doesn't mean lawyer, that means that's just the name in the law. They would be able to handle my financial and legal affairs. According to, they need to consider my wishes, but it's a little different from the Representation Agreement Act, the duty of under the enduring power of attorney, and I think this holds across the country for financial legal, is to essentially at the end of the day make decisions that they think are best for me as opposed to what I would want. So that's just a little difference between our laws, the healthcare side. So those are the documents people make to plan for the future. In case something happens, they've got their arrangements in place. But the other piece of legislation in British Columbia that came out of the law reform is what we call the Representation Agreement Section 7. And that's really what we, our specialty, you could say, here at NIDUS, is to help everyone learn about that and be able to use that law if they need it. So under the Section 7 of the Representation Agreement Act, it says that a representative could be authorized to help with minor and major health care decisions, personal care decisions, routine financial affairs, and legal affairs. And the big difference is that someone could make a representation agreement Section 7 even if they cannot manage their own affairs right now, even if their mental competency is in question right now. So that's one of the differences for the representation agreement Section 9 and the enduring power of attorney. You have to be mentally competent to make those documents. But for the representation agreement Section 7, the law, we put into law a new way of looking at capability. And the new law recognizes that capability depends on many factors. So there's not a specific requirement to make a representation agreement Section 7. It might, you know, people are capable in different ways. The kinds of things that need to be looked after are different for different people, and the law recognizes that. And I'll give you a couple of examples. So the law says that the way a person communicates is not a factor in determining whether they could make a representation agreement Section 7. So we know that people communicate in many ways, and not just verbally. People communicate, you know, blinking their eyes with the aid of communication devices and also through their behavior. And we find that people with dementia, for example, as the dementia progresses, which it doesn't for everyone to the same degree, but it can progress to a point where people are not able to put full sentences together, and sometimes they're really not sure what their verbalizations mean, but they are communicating to us through their behaviors, and we pay attention. Again, sometimes we have to guess, but the point is they're communicating. So the law says they're communicating, and we need to pay attention to that. And the law says that they could make a representation agreement even if they cannot manage their own affairs. And the whole idea of what we were trying to do was to enable people to get help from people who know them, that they have a relationship with, and not have to go and get permission from the court, for example, under guardianship, that they can do this themselves in the within those relationships. And we put the duties of representatives in the law, and the duty is that the representative must always be looking to the adult's communication, the adult's wishes, their current wishes, if they don't know those, their wishes they expressed when they were capable. And if we don't know that, because you won't know them all, then the making decisions, helping the adult based on their values and beliefs. And so that's the way that you keep it about the person and their wishes and their safety.
You know, thank you for that, Joanne. I think really what you're saying is the efforts that you are doing within British Columbia are really, truly groundbreaking and new and different and innovative. And for that, you are to be commended for creating new structure and new ideas for people. And that really leads me into to my next question, which is it true that the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities looked into the Representation Agreement Act of British Columbia for their inspiration when they drafted their documents?
Yes, that is true. The UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities was passed by the United Nations in 2008, and of course our legislation it was passed in 1993. It came into effect in 2000, so we had lots and lots of knowledge and experience about that that was used by people who were trying to put this convention, particular convention together. And Article 12 of that convention is based on the Representation Agreement Act. And essentially it says that all adults are equal, need to be equal under the law when it comes to directing their lives and making decisions. And if they need assistance because of an intellectual disability, which could be, you know, from a brain injury or dementia, it could be that they were born with a developmental disability, but that if people need assistance with decision making because of an intellectual disability, then the government needs to provide for that and enable that. And of course, that's what British Columbia's legislation does, is that it enables people to get support, as I said, from the people who know them and care about them, and to do that within their relationships. And the article at the UN Convention also talked about abolishing adult guardianship. I think that's not come true. We haven't abolished it here in BC, but I think what we did in British Columbia is we said it is the last resort, and because people can use the Representation Agreement Section 7. And I think that we are, you know, working away at making sure that that's true. And the way that's true is for people to be educated about the Representation Agreement so that they can use it when they need to.
Thank you for that. That is so interesting. You must someday sit back and say how wonderful the work is that we have done and started, and to be a model for the world. We are honored to have you as part of this program. And so congratulations. I mean, I'm so thrilled to have the opportunity to share with our Canadian audience what you do in British Columbia, and for families who live in British Columbia, or maybe they live elsewhere, to learn from what you're doing. This is just amazing work. Thank you so much for that. To go on to our next question, what is the NIDAS Personal Planning Registry, and could you give us examples of how families can use it?
Right. Well, thank you, Mary, for seeing the innovation in our education work, and the registry really flows out of that, because as you can tell, the legislation in British Columbia, the Representation Agreement Act, is focused on self-determination, and so when people make their arrangements, make their representation agreement, the question, of course, is, well, I've made it, now how are people going to know about it? Because often we need those documents, you know, and I'm even across the country, various legal documents that people make, often we need them when there's a health crisis, right? And so how can we enable that finding those documents easily, quickly, knowing who to contact? And so that's where the idea of the registry came from. And we just launched our new online system. So we initially set the registry up in 2002, but technology has changed a lot since then. And so we just launched this new system that makes it even easier for people to register their information and for it to be accessible. So for example, I could help my dad. I did help my dad, actually, who had Parkinson. I was his representative. He also had an enduring power of attorney for his financial legal things, and we registered those in the registry. And so we set up a registry account in his name, and we put information in about what documents he'd made and We even uploaded a copy, which is very handy to have all that available. And he said that for the who could have access to it, that he wanted, you know, hospitals and healthcare type of institutions to have access to the healthcare representation agreement, and the, you know, financial institutions to the his enduring power of attorney, so that you can make those things grant permissions for accessibility when you register them. And that's, he can go in and, or I can help him go in and update contact information, you know, if he moves, or if the representative or the backup alternate representative moves, you can put in that information. So if he ends up in hospital and he lives on his own, I don't live with him. So if he has an accident or he goes to hospital and he's not able to say who his representative is, he has a wallet card from the registry that helps the healthcare providers find his information. And even if I do know that he's in the hospital, I'm probably rushing up to the hospital and I might not take a copy of the agreement with me that says I am his representative, but I can get that. I can download that from the registry. So it's all about communication. When, you know, you have difficulty doing that, the registry is there to help. It's really about connecting your information to the right people at the right time. There's many more features, but I hope that gives some idea. I get, you know, we get inquiries all the time from families whose parent is in the hospital and they don't know if their parent made any arrangements. And so the registry is a place they can start to find out, is there anything in the registry? And then, you know, depending on whether there is or not, going to the next steps to help access that information, make sure it's in the hands of the right people. But that's a challenge, I think, for society today is that whole issue of communication.
And you know what, from a family perspective and just from knowing how our family has dealt with crisis and situations, having a place to go and find these documents must decrease the stress that families are going through. It's got to be something that they can say, let's go to this registry, find out this information, and then you know what? It's just one thing that comes off the table to worry about. If you've got access to the paperwork, then people can make plans, they can understand what the wishes were, and I really hope that the audience who lives in British Columbia or who has family in British Columbia goes and registers with you. It will help them and it will also encourage family conversation. And for people who can have the courage and the guts to talk about these topics, trust me, you are doing your loved ones a big favor, one, to register, and two, to let them know that you've done that. And it's an absolute gift. It's a gift when people can take that off their plate. I know many people who go through old cupboards and bookcases and boxes in the garages and all kinds of things looking for these legal documents, and their stress is going through the roof. But what you have created is absolutely brilliant for families.
Yes, and we are very anxious to let people know about it and help people to be using it. And again, you can see how these ideas coming from, you know, ordinary people actually have great ideas because of exactly what you said, Mary, the practical challenges of you know, just getting through life, frankly. And when you have a loved one who is ill or injured, you just want to make sure everything is taken care of as quickly and easily as possible, because you want your focus to be on them, not, as you say, rummaging around the garage or various bookcases, et cetera, trying to get the piece of paper that you need in order to help the person.
So, Joanne, I'd like to finish with one final question. Is there anything else that you would like to share with us?
Well, thank you, Mary. I think there's a couple of things that I'd like to mention. One is I on our website, which I'll give shortly, we have forms for representation agreements that people can use, people in British Columbia. They're free to download, and the law requires people to have two witnesses, so they don't have to go to a legal professional. They don't have to go to a lawyer or a notary public. People can do this themselves. We provide the instructions and all the paperwork. Obviously, we want people to get informed before they go to that step, and we have lots of information for them. So I want them to know that they're very, again, you know, as I said in the beginning, the point was to make sure that this information and also the doing of the forms is very accessible. Sometimes people have to cancel or revoke their documents, and we have forms for that as well. So you can see that the accessibility is key to what we try to offer. I also thought that I might be able to share a couple of examples of the Representation Agreement Section 7 in action, because I talked very abstractly about the law. So I'm recalling a call I had quite a few years ago from a woman whose husband was in a care facility. He had dementia. And they lived in different communities because she lived in a very small town and it didn't have a care facility. And so she would go and visit him. She had to drive on the highway to visit him regularly. That was very important. But she had a motorhome sitting in the backyard. And obviously they weren't going to be going on trips anymore, and she wasn't going to go on it on her own. And she wanted to sell it. But he didn't make his arrangements when he was mentally capable, and so she was stuck. She didn't have the document that she needed. But the Representation Agreement Section 7, because it says he can make that even if he can't manage his own affairs right now, with our help, she was able to help him make a Representation Agreement Section 7, and the staff at the care facility were witnesses because they knew this was a good relationship, and she just wanted to be able to sell that motorhome so that, you know, it wasn't sitting there in the yard. Somebody else could use it, but she could use that money to have, you know, to pay for gas to go and visit him, which is something he would want. So that's one example of how people use the Representation Agreement Section 7, because I mentioned it covers routine finances. It's also important for healthcare decisions. The representative can be an advocate for health and personal care decisions, consent to, you know, care facility placement if that happens, which is something that happens in dementia. So it has very real, down-to-earth, practical uses so that people can get on with life, so to speak. And even changing an address can be a problem if somebody doesn't have legal authority to do that and you need to change the address with various institutions. It's covered under our Representation Agreement Section 7. 24/7. So I hope that gives people a little bit better idea of how it can work in real life. And I hope you'll come to our website and read some more about it.
Thank you for that, Joanne. That was wonderful. And my final question for you, Joanne, is could you please share your contact information with us?
Yes. Well, we have a website is www.nidus.ca, and you'll find lots and lots of information on that website. We are a BC organization, and our focus is on legislation in British Columbia, but many of the concepts, the ideas, are the same across the country and, you know, many other countries, other jurisdictions as well. So people might find useful information if they're coming from other places, just to help them. And we are obviously there for people who live in BC and giving very specific information to them. Because of limited funds, which nonprofits, you know, face normally, and it's even tougher in these economic times, we operate a lot of our services online. And so that's why I'm giving the website. And when you go to the website, you will find the general email address, info@nidus.ca. But we also have free webinars that people can sign up for, and videos and stories, as well as, of course, access to the online registry.
That's absolutely fabulous. I am so glad that you have joined our project to tell Canadians about what you do. And I really hope that people go to your website and get their family affairs in order with a lawyer and then take it to the next step and register with you. It's absolutely brilliant what you are doing. And so I thank you for joining our project.
Well, thank you very much, Mary, and all the best for the work you're doing to help bring awareness to families and individuals, because I think this is an area that hasn't had a lot of attention, as I said. So it's great work.
Well, thank you so much. And now to wrap up, Chris Cata, who is one of our board directors, and I have a few closing comments.
Mary, who are our initial project supporters?
We wish to acknowledge that this project is funded in part by the Government of Canada's New Horizons for Seniors program. Our other initial supporters include Care Connect, the Care Guide, the Healing Cycle Foundation, and Scotia Trust. Caregiving Matters is an internet-based registered Canadian charity dedicated to educating and supporting family caregivers. 90% of our work is done online and by leveraging technologies. 10% is done by producing local educational events. We leverage technologies in everything that we do, ensuring greater reach and sustainability. I trust that we have given you some of the highlights of our exciting new initiative. If you are interested in speaking with me about the project, please let me know. We look forward to your questions and your ideas.
Mary, if listeners have questions, what's the best way for them to contact us?
Well, they can contact me, Mary Bart, Chair of Caregiving Matters. My email is mary@caregivingmatters.ca. Our telephone number is 905-939-2931. And our website is www.caregivingmatters.ca.